All right, thanks everybody. At this point, we're going to have the two folks here talk for 20 minutes apiece on step 12, which reads, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of working these steps, which tried to carry this message to other compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. 20 minutes each. First will be Matt. Do you want your time divided up?
Do you want me to go first?
I don't care if you want to go first.
Seems like you want me to.
Yeah, you can go first.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's fine. All right. I'm Josh, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And I'll go first. This way I'll be able to pay way more attention to Matt, which is really what I'm excited for. So I don't have to think about what I'm going to say. But I'm Josh, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And thank you to Robin for asking me to share, and really happy to be at this workshop in particular to talk about step 12. I brought some pictures to show that I am a compulsive overeater. So I'll pass those around for anyone that hasn't seen them or anything like that. They're newer pictures. I had old, really cool pictures, and then I moved, and I had brought them into my old place to scan them, and then haven't seen them since. They had lasted like 10 years, like in the trunk of my car, and as soon as I like tried to be responsible with them, they were gone. But, you know, that will be done, not mine. It wasn't hard to find other pictures. So those are some pictures. And I love one of them over there is of me at Ghirardelli in San Francisco, which for a compulsive overeater was, you know, the ultimate dream. I used to have all these theories before I came into program about food and different stuff and about, you know, what my future wife would be like. I knew I'd find my wife because we'd order Chinese food and we'd get beef and broccoli and she'd eat all the broccoli and I could eat all the beef, you know. I thought if I could find that, then I'd have it all made. And then my other theory was that I was going to get married at Ghirardelli Square because I thought that that would be like the coolest thing ever. Thank God both of those things did not come true. But that's sort of, you know, what it was like, you know, for me before was just everything was about the food. I don't remember a time where I wasn't a compulsive overeater. You know, growing up, I always had a sort of different relationship with food. And my favorite story to tell when I was really young, I just get home from school, and my first question to my mom would be, what's for dinner? And oftentimes it was something, you know, that I wanted, and it was great, and it would make my night, and everything would be awesome, you know, because I had the dinner that I wanted. But sometimes, and my mom was a great cook, and there was always enough food, but sometimes she'd be making a dinner that Josh wasn't in the mood for, you know, and at 8, 10 years old or whatever, I remember, you know, she'd say she's making this dinner, I'd get really pissed, I'd be really resentful, and I wouldn't know how I was going to get through the night without my food. That was just sort of what it was like, you know, from the beginning and from as long as I could remember, was if I had the food when I wanted it, and what I wanted, then everything was okay. And it was like this, like, relief. And I'd be sitting there, like, eating the food and, you know, trying to enjoy it. And then I'd be thinking about, like, well, what am I going to get to have next? And when am I going to get my fix again? And when I got my driver's license and got to college, it got really out of hand with the food for me because I had a lot more control in terms of being able to get what I wanted when I wanted it. And I would go to any length to get food. And I went to school for college about an hour east of here. So I like to say, you know, I could tell you every single 24-hour drive-through in an hour radius of here because I knew them all. And if it was greasy, if it was deep fried, if it was Dr. Pepper, if it was a milkshake, if it was a donut, I was interested. If it was a burger. Otherwise, I wasn't really that interested. And that stuff worked because it was cheap and it numbed me out. I'd literally go to the dorm, eat the all-you-could-eat dinner, have, you know, double portions, and then I would go to the drive-thru. I'd go to the one, oftentimes it closes at 1 a.m. on weekdays and 1:30 a.m. on weekends, and I would order, you know, double portions, and then I would, you know, eat that, and then maybe 3 or 4 in the morning I'd go again, And I, you know, eat at a different, you know, a 24-hour drive-thru or maybe find a donut shop and that kind of thing. And I'd eat so much to the point where I'd literally be in physical pain all the time. And I'd, you know, have diarrhea, be sitting on the toilet and saying to myself, Josh, you can't eat like this anymore. And then maybe, you know, 45 minutes later, hour later, hour and a half later, not when I was hungry, but when I was physically able to eat again, I'd be eating. And that's what it was like for me before I came into program. If you asked me before I came into program whether or not I was, you know, happy, I might have said yes, but I didn't. But I wouldn't have necessarily known why. And I wouldn't have really, and I didn't really have real relationships with people. I couldn't have, I couldn't really be myself before I came to the program, because such a big part of my identity was being overweight and the food. And if I could make it all about the food and being overweight and being the funny fat guy, then I could hide behind that and I didn't have to really be myself. And it was great for me because it allowed me to keep, you know, eating the way that I needed to eat. And it was when I came to this program that I learned that I have a threefold disease. That it's physical, and the physical was easy for me to see because I couldn't stop eating and I had all this excess weight. June 29th, I celebrated 11 years of abstinence, one day at a time, and as you can see from my pictures, I was around my top weight. My top weight's about 260 pounds. And I was 19 years old going into my junior year of college, and I started doing exercise for the first time in years. And I thought, do I want to take a look at this food thing? And I'd never gone on diets or anything like that because I only was interested in eating. And my dad had sort of struggled and gone up and down with his weight throughout my life. And he then found Overeaters Anonymous 16 years ago, exactly. February, he celebrated 16 years of abstinence. And something was different when he came to OA. You know, he had done other stuff, and he'd stick to it for maybe a year or two or less and, you know, go from thing to thing. But this he had stuck to for longer, and it was sort of, it was different. And I now, you know, understand he had a sort of sense of serenity around the food that he hadn't had before. And at 19 years old, he was, you know, 5 years into it, I asked him, you know, what's with this Overeaters Anonymous thing? What's going on? And I'm sharing this part of the story because I think it's really important in terms of step 12. You know, obviously at that point I wasn't anywhere near step 12. But this was a unique opportunity where my dad had to 12-step me into Overeaters Anonymous. And he was the reason that I, you know, came in this young. And God, you know, obviously put him in my life anyways from birth. And he's responsible for my life. But he, you know, that conversation was one of the most important conversations that I would ever have in my life. You know, that was, you know, a big turning point for me, and that was God and talking to me through my dad. And he didn't try to talk to me about it. He didn't try to relate to me about the food at that point. What he did was he brought me to a meeting, and that was what I needed. And we went to Serenity Sunday, which is still my home meeting, which at the time was meeting at Roxbury Park and is now meeting at La Cienega Park in Beverly Hills. And we went to the newcomer meeting, and then we went to the main meeting. And I heard people talking about food and sort of the ways that I've, you know, been describing it now. And I knew that I was, you know, that I was amongst you guys. I knew I was a compulsive overeater. And I never heard anyone else talking about it like that. And then, you know, I had alluded to I have a physical, emotional, and spiritual disease. And the physical, that was easy for me to see because I couldn't stop eating. But then people were also talking about the emotional parts of the disease and the spiritual. And in particular, they were talking about the solution, you know, through these 12 steps. And that I didn't understand, you know, and what that was about. Because I didn't know that I had a threefold disease, or that I even had a disease before I came to this program. And, you know, these guys, you know, I've heard these people, you know, that had lost all this weight and kept it off for years, and I was intrigued. And intrigued enough to, you know, come back and get a sponsor and start going through the steps and formally working the steps with a sponsor. And, at first, like I said, was a little bit, freaked out by the stuff, but I knew that, my dad wasn't part of anything weird, and that, and since I'd heard people talking about stuff in the same way that I did, I was intrigued enough to come back. And I knew after about the sixth meeting that I was willing to go to any length to recover from this disease. I was willing to go to any length, one day at a time. And for me, that meant, getting, defining my abstinence and my food plan, working with a sponsor, and working the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. And I, formally went through them with a sponsor. That sponsor I worked with for about a year and a half or 2 years before he went out. But he was the sponsor that I needed when I came in. And he was really gentle with me. He was a younger guy, maybe, 10, 15 years older than me at the time. And I could really, relate to him. And at the time, he had what I wanted. So I was calling him. And we, went through and worked the steps. And I've had a few different sponsors in this program because after he went out, I had to find some new ones. And, so they worked for the time that they were in front of me, but they weren't, but they didn't necessarily last, and that was okay, because what was important for me was to just have a sponsor. You don't, if you're, new and you don't have a sponsor and you feel like, oh, I need to wait until I get the perfect sponsor, well, no, you don't. All you need, for at least me, I just need to have a sponsor. And that sponsor was going to be perfect for me for that time being. Now I've had a sponsor who I've been working with for, I think, 7 years or so, and had I started working with him maybe early on in program, he may not have been the right sponsor for me. But because God put him in my life at the time that he did, he is the perfect sponsor for me. And the reason he's my sponsor is because he has what I want. He has a relationship with his higher power that I want. He works a spiritual program that I want to have. He works a program that I want to have. He makes more outreach calls in this program than anybody I know. And he has a relationship with his family that I want. He's one of the most patient, amazing, understanding, human beings that I know. And that's why he's my sponsor, because he has what I want. And I call him every day, and he's like the most gentle sponsor, which is funny because I'm not as gentle, when I sponsor people. But I've become more gentle, since working with him. And, it's like I'll call him and I'll ask him for advice. And he'll never give me advice. He'll always say, well, Josh, can I share with you my experience? And I'm like, yeah, of course you can share with me your experience. I've been calling you every day for years. I want your experience. And most of the time, it's always the same experience. It's always, well, Josh, if I write about it, and if I pray about it, and if I listen to my higher power, God will give me the right answer. God will give me the answer. And I'm like, oh, it's like so simple. But when I'm calling about the stuff, most of the time I haven't done the work. I haven't done the writing. I haven't written out the resentment. I haven't, done that stuff. And I haven't prayed on it. And I haven't really taken that step back and meditated on it and tried to listen. And there isn't, and it's like, That for me is usually the answer. But I forget, because I have this disease that's trying to tell me I don't have a disease, and I have this will that's trying to take back my life all the time, and I have to be reminded to get back into God's will all the time. And step 12 helps me to do that, because I call my sponsor and he tells me. But then, more importantly, I have these sponsees now, that I work with, and they're constantly reminding me of that. And my sponsor likes to tell me all the time, something great that, really helps me. And it's like his way of encouraging me to keep working the program. Like, so subtly, it's like, well, we can't share with other people our experience if it's not, our experience, if it's not what we're doing. I can't work the steps with a sponsee if I'm not working the steps myself, in the program. And it's like, I can't, share my experience, calling in my food if I'm not calling in my food. It's like all that stuff. So it's like, oh, well, if I'm going to sponsor people, it's like I also have to have that accountability with my sponsor. And that's been something that's been really important for me. And going through the process and the steps with sponsees is like going through it, you know, again, for myself. And I know for me, it's like sometimes I'll have these sponsees and it's like they're going out and they're relapsing and they're not calling and they're, you know, doing all this stuff. And it's like my initial instincts will want to be like, oh, it's like it's my fault or I'm doing something wrong or I'm failing as a sponsor, or, you know, and whatever. But it's like that, you know, famous conversation with, you know, Bill W. and his wife early on when he kept trying to get all these drunks sober and they'd keep going back out. And, you know, she said, well, are you drunk? Are you drinking? And he's like, well, no. And it's like, okay, well, then it's working. You know, because at the end of the day, it's like my relationship with my sponsees actually, I think, helps me more than it helps them. And it's great that it helps them because I know it helps them because I know how much and how grateful I am for my sponsor in my life. And I know how much he helps me, but it's like, my sponsees help me even more. And it's funny because it's like I met the first time, maybe the second time in program, the first time in so long where like I'm not standing up and saying that I sponsor people, which is odd. And it's because I'm actually feeling like I'm sort of at capacity with it. And I'm at 7 and I was at 6 and I stopped and then a 7th guy asked me and I still said yes. You know, it's like sort of how it goes. And I'm, you know, at this point, if like it did take someone on, it would have to be like a younger guy because that was, you know, what they relate to, because that was something that was really important for me when I came in, because coming in at 19, there weren't that many people that I could relate to. So at this point, though, and being in Los Angeles where there is so much recovery and so many amazing sponsors, it's like at our meeting on Sunday, you know, we have, you know, at least 10 people will stand up and say they sponsored now, and there's like 25 that stand up before that are sponsors. So at least now I can, you know, try to, you know, carry the message in that way when I do, but it's like, I think it's like at 7... You know, I don't know that I can do more, but maybe I could. And they don't. Some call every day, and some don't. And it's like, and that's what it is. And it's like, you know, with my first sponsor, it was like, okay, the job of the sponsee is to call the sponsor, and I would never call. I'd maybe call a sponsee once if they stopped, and then I'd let them, you know, go and be on their path. And that was like sort of like what that experience was. And you know, you have to have the accountability and so on. It's like the sponsee's job to call the sponsor. But now I'm working with my sponsor, and he'll call me if I don't, you know, call even one day. And he'll call all his sponsees that he's ever had on every holiday. And he's, like, really good, like, does that. And now I understand that. And I'm learning that's important. Just even making that call, and you don't even necessarily have to talk about program, but just checking in on people that are out. That really helps me to do that. You know, I have a, you know, good friend in program who's out and won't usually take my calls, but I'll still, you know, leave him a message because I know that I would want that message and that message helps me, you know, to remember the message. And it's one of my favorite things to hear about at meetings is relapse. And the reason is because I know how easy it would be for me to go back out and do it and to start believing my own head and thinking that I can do it on my own. And I can't. And I want to talk about, you know, the entirety of step 12 also in terms of like the beginning of it, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of working these steps. And like I said before, I have a spiritual disease. If you asked me before I came into program whether or not I believed in God, I would have said yes. But if you asked me if I thought about God on a daily basis, for 5 minutes, perfect. You know, I would have said no. And God wasn't a part of my life on a daily basis. Yeah, you know, maybe I'd go to temple and I would, you know, think about it, but it wasn't. I didn't think that God was concerned with my daily life and my actions and what I was doing throughout the day, let alone with my food, or you know, really with my life. And today, I'm constantly trying to seek God's will and trying to take that step back and let in God and let go. And that is a result of this program. And it's like, it's, you know, the perspective with that, it doesn't matter, you know, what's going on outside, if it's, you know, good or bad, the way that I'm able to feel the good and the bad and the even, you know, and everything with my higher power is so different than before when I was trying to do it on my own and shoveling down the food. It didn't matter how good things were before because I couldn't see it. I couldn't remember it. You know, I'd go to these, you know, I'd go to Dodger games and I'd literally eat the entire time and that's all I'd remember. I'd have no idea what happened. Same thing with the movies. I'd go and I'd have two large popcorns, you know, because there was a free refill. So why not? And I'd go to these movies and I wouldn't even remember what happened. It's like now I go to the movies and it's like I, like, watch the movie, you know. It's like totally different experience. I go to the baseball game and I'm like, oh, this is a good baseball game. You know, it's like it's totally different experience. What I want to say is I've had numerous God shots in this program, in spiritual awakenings, and I had one really recently that I want to talk about, and I have them every day. And before program, I was probably having them, but I didn't see them. But today, I can see them, and that's amazing, and it's a miracle. So, as I've already told you guys, Serenity Sunday is my home meeting. It's like, you know, I look forward to it every week. And it was a Sunday, 4 months ago, and I was going to be going to a brunch that was honoring my mother-in-law for this charity thing. It was a great, exciting thing to go to. But I was, you know, of course, annoyed because I was going to have to miss my meeting because it was during Serenity Sunday. So, and it was daylight savings, and I ended up looking up, and there was a meeting here in Culver City at 9 a.m., which I drove to, which I'd never been to, because I have my home meeting on Sundays. And I ended up running late. I didn't leave till late, but I knew that I could, you know, get there for most of the meeting, and I really needed a meeting that morning. So I got there at about 9:20, and it was this old, you know, dark, AA room with the 12 steps and 12 traditions on the wall. And I walk in and it's completely dark and nobody's in there. It's 9:20 in the morning. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I look around, nobody there. I'm about to leave. A woman walks in. She says, are you here for the OA meeting? I said, yeah. Are you? She's like, yeah, I've never been to this meeting. I was like, oh, neither have I. Do you want to have a meeting? And she's like, yeah, I do. Like, I really need a meeting. I was like, great. So we sat down. We read the 12 steps. We did the Serenity Prayer. She shared for 5 minutes, and she shared about all this stuff, like, with her work. And at the time, I had all this stuff going on with my work, and I didn't, like, was having a really hard time dealing with it. And I still am, but, like, even more so, you know, then. And she started talking about it and solutions and things that I, like, need to hear, like, that, like, literally were, like, completely relevant, you know, to my life. So then I shared for a while, like, about my stuff. I said, literally, you know, that I'm trying to go from 0 to 60 without doing 1 through 59. And I hadn't realized that, and that was what was going on. Then she shared again, I shared again, we did the Serenity Prayer, we closed. Right after we're done with the meeting, literally, you know, 2 minutes later, we were just finishing up, guy walks in, he says, you can't be in here. We said, what are you talking about? We're here for the Hope Readers Anonymous meeting. He said, no, the meeting closed, it moved locations, you know, and this isn't the meeting. Well, had I not been having this brunch that I didn't want, right, that my will would have never had me go to, had I not been running late, you know, to this meeting, I wouldn't have heard the message that I needed to hear that morning from this woman. And for me, that's God. That is a spiritual awakening. And before a program, I wouldn't have even thought about it or blinked or seen it. But now in program, it's so clearly God doing for me what I cannot do for myself. So having had a spiritual awakening as the result of working these steps, I have to carry the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. And the last thing I want to say, just to take it for a minute, which I always loved, and it was something that I'd heard from someone that was in AA who was talking about coming into OA and how he had to still work the steps in OA, even though the steps are so similar between AA and OA. And the thing is that it's only step 1 and 12 that talk about the food, right? But it's still really important that we, you know, admit that we're powerless over food and our lives have become manageable. And it's really important that having, you know, done 2 through 11, that we carry the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers, that we work with other compulsive overeaters. And even though most of the steps are not about the food, and you know, ultimately the program is not about the food, it's still important for me to be connecting on a daily basis with other compulsive overeaters. So thanks for letting me share.
Hi, my name's Matt, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi,
guys. And to qualify, for anyone who doesn't know me, I'm down 160 pounds from my top weight by the grace of this program. I have 7 years of abstinence, and I'm only here today because of the 12th step. And my sponsor explained to me that the 12th step is broken down into three things. Having had a spiritual experience as the result of working these steps, which means that every day that I abstain, every day that I eat absently, every single meal that I eat absently, that's a spiritual experience. Like, that's a spiritual awakening. When I sit down and I have a meal that has a beginning and an end, that is a spiritual experience. Because at my core, I'm a compulsive overeater. At my core, it's like everything that I do, the solution was eating. The solution was food. So it's like having that realization that every day that I get up and I stay absent, it's a miracle. Like, just at my core, it's a miracle. You know, I was talking to this guy today who was, he had just finished binging. He's like, I don't know why I did it, but I did. I was like, you did it because you're a compulsive overeater. You know, and for me, it really takes a lot of the judgment out of what it is that we do and why we do it. And, you know, having had a spiritual experience as the result of working these steps, we carry the message to other compulsive overeaters. That's part two. So what does carrying the message mean? And, you know, I think for me, it's like we live in this black and white of like, what is doing this or what is doing that? Like, what is it that we're trying to do? And it's like when I go to a meeting and I put the chairs out, that is carrying the message, because that is providing an opportunity for someone to sit in those chairs and hear and sit in a meeting. That is carrying the message. When we put the signs up to come into this meeting, that is carrying the message. When we sell literature, that is carrying the message. When I just show up in a meeting and I have my 3-minute share and I talk about how I'm going through all this shit but I didn't eat over it, that is carrying the message. Because for me, simply carrying the message is just saying that the program works. That's it. That's what carrying the message is. And it's not telling people what to do. Because the whole idea is, like, even the wording, I believe that the wording, that every single word that is picked for the 12 and 12 and the big book, it's so specific. We carry the message. We don't deliver it. We don't hand it to anybody. We carry the message. And if they want to pick it up and run with it and work the steps, then that's up to them. You know, and the last part is, having had a spiritual experience as the result of working these steps, we carry the message to other compulsive overeaters, and we practice these principles in all our affairs. You know, this whole idea of practicing these principles in all my affairs, it's like, it says we practice them. It doesn't say that we master them. You know, so for me, the whole idea is like, if I'm going to, I get to go out there and I get to live my life. And what's really funny is like, just in the 7 years I've been here, it's like you get tons of people that come to the Steps 1, 2, and 3 workshop. Little less at the 4, 5, and 6 workshop. And, like, God bless you if you get anyone at a 9-step workshop. Because, like, it just doesn't happen. But the thing about the 12th step is that it tells me that I get to live a life. But it also tells me that, like, things are still going to come up. And that it's a program for living. You know, it's a program that helps me with the food. But the 12th step is telling me that this is a program that can help me with how I am with the food. And how I am with the people around me. So this whole idea of practicing the principles in all of my affairs, it means that I have to get out of the rooms and go live my life. I have to get out of the rooms and allow myself to have opportunities where I might screw up, where I have to actually use the program. So in the 7 years I've been here, I've left one job, I started 2 other jobs, I left that job, I got married, I got divorced, and the whole thing is like, did I do it perfectly? Absolutely not. But the one thing my sponsor tells me, he goes, Matt, you can go in that room, and if all you can say is that I got through this and I got through it absolutely, then you're doing your job. You know, maybe that's the only message I can carry. You know, but the whole idea of like carrying the message to other people, and it's like we call people up, and especially when we're new, and we say like, oh, thank you so much for listening. We're like, no, you're helping me more than I'm helping myself. And it's like it says here in step 12, in the AA 12 and 12, it says, the thing is, my sponsor told me at 30 days you can start sponsoring. Did my sponsees get very far? No. They usually didn't last 30 days themselves with me. But the whole point is like, most likely if someone wants you to help them and they know what level of experience is, like, that's maybe just all they can do. Maybe that's all they can do. But the whole point is, like, I have to be there to hear it. My sponsor took me on a field trip to an AA meeting, and afterwards we all went to this cafe. And they were going to just let me ask them any questions I needed to about the Big Book and about the 12 steps, just because I was so new and I didn't understand it, and we have all these questions. And they're like, we're willing to sit here and give you the one thing that we can't ever get back. What is that? And I was like, I have no idea. They're like, we're willing to give you our time. And your time is your most precious possession. You can't get that back, you know? And so that for me told me that if people are willing to give me their time, that there must be something here in the rooms. And it says, even the newest of newcomers finds undreamed rewards as he tries to help his brother alcoholic, the one who is even blinder than he. Sometimes, you feel like it's the blind leading the blind, you know? It's like when you're working with the sponsee and I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Just, like, turn to God. But the whole point is, like, we learn, like, if I don't have the experience with this, like, well, you know what? I know someone who does have experience with it. Because we're not here to tell each other what to do. We're just here just to share experience. This is indeed the kind of giving that actually demands nothing. He does not expect his brother's sufferer to pay him or even to love him. And then he discovers that by the divine paradox of this kind of giving, he has found his own reward, whether his brother has yet received anything or not. And here's the thing for me about step 12 that, like, I just read today, and it really stood out to me. It says, and this is, to me, the humility of what we're doing here. It's like, we're not here to be perfect. We're not here to get our angel wings or our halo. Like, we're really here just to live the best life that we can, as honestly as we can, and doing our absolute best to live by spiritual principles. And this whole idea that, like, we're not supposed to screw up is like, not what the program is about. Because I think that we don't need God if we're perfect. Like, I need God. Like, I have to screw up so that I can get closer to God, so I can find out what God's really all about. The more I allow myself and I'm willing to take those risks that allow me to fall short, it gives me an opportunity to allow my God and my higher power to be bigger. But I wouldn't know that unless I put myself in a position to have to find that out. But it says about them, it says his own character may still be gravely defective, but he somehow knows that God has enabled him to make a mighty beginning, and he senses that he stands at the edge of new mysteries, joys, and experiences of which he had never even dreamed. And for me, when I'm sitting down with another with another compulsive overeater, or when I'm in a meeting and I see that person has come in and this is their very first meeting and they can't stop crying, there's something about that where also, on the one hand, there's a complete compassion that I have that I put forth towards that person, because I know exactly where they've been, because I've been there. But also there's a complete realization that God has done for me what I can't do for myself, because the truth is I'm not where they are anymore, because I went through the steps and I'm working the program. So when you're sitting there with a newcomer, you realize you are just like that person. But as a result of working the steps, we're not that person anymore. And so for me, the act of the 12th step is about connecting to who we are, connecting to who we were, recognizing that we are always going to be that person, but we're not that person anymore. And that's where, like, every day I have to acknowledge I am a compulsive overeater. I'm powerless over being a compulsive overeater. My life is made unmanageable. Step 2, came to believe in a power greater than myself that can restore me to sanity. And 3, I make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And also this whole idea of, like, turning my will and my life over to the care of God. There's a real, for me, part of turning my will over means that I'm willing to share my experience. It means that I'm willing to open up and be honest. And my girlfriend now is in, she's in 12 steps. And she's on step 1. So, I mean, our little studio apartment is not big enough for both of us. And the thing is like, having 7 years of experience, it's like my experience, I can share my experience, but it doesn't mean anything if I'm not living up to the principles either. And also recognizing that her experience is different than mine. You know, and again, like, in step 12, we practice these principles in all our affairs. So there's such an idea of, like, surrender, letting her have her experience how she needs to have it. Even with sponsees, allowing them to have their experience the way they need to have it. Every day is a day that I can choose recovery or I can choose my disease. And just the simplicity of what the 12th step is about for me, it's about getting out of my own head. If we really want to keep it simple, it's about getting out of my own head. If I'm sitting there just thinking about myself, think about someone else. It's for me. It's not for you. If I'm spinning, if I'm in my head and it's just spinning, thinking about the same thing over and over again. Yeah, but if I do this and then I do that and then if I do that. Well, call someone else and see how they're doing. That to me is like the simplicity at the most basic level. It's almost not even about spirituality. It's just about you can't fix a broken mind with a broken brain. So how do I get out of my head? Don't think about me. Just call someone else and see how they're doing. But I think that that's the simplicity of what the 12th step is, but I think on a broader level, I think that it's the 12th step is about holding myself spiritually accountable for what the program has given me. You know, and again, like, it says at the end of the OA 12 and 12, it says, those of us who live this program don't simply carry the message. We are the message. And it's italicized. We are the message. Each day that we live well, we are well. And we embody the joy of recovery, which attracts others who want what we found in OA. We're always happy to share our secret. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous, which empowers each of us to live well and be well, one day at a time. You know, and the tradition of anonymity and how we don't break our anonymity at the level of press. So that's the level of press, radio, film, and all, you know, and public media communication. It doesn't mean that out in our daily life, if the opportunity doesn't present itself, that we don't let people know that we're in OA. We're here to carry the message. We're here to let people know that the program works. And I'll tell you, man, like, I always want to believe that it's a secret and it's like it's a gift that was given me, but if I give it away, I'm going to lose it. It's like the superstitious fear that we have, you know? And it's like this whole idea of each day that we live well, we are well. And here's the thing. Even when I get up and I do my prayers and my meditation, I call my sponsor and then my sponsees call and I take their calls and I have that. There's this part of me that doesn't want to believe that I am well. But this tells me each day that we live well, we are well. And we embody the joy of recovery, which attracts others. The whole point is like, you know, I'm in this place now where, you know, after the divorce, I got a really crap. I left one job because I couldn't do it. And I'm a back server at a restaurant. I'm a glorified busser right now at a fancy restaurant. I have a college degree and I'm not making a lot of money. And I feel like my creative career hasn't taken off. Like nothing's really working. Well, lo and behold, I'm in a place with a lot of addicts and alcoholics, which is ironic, you know. And it's where God has me right now. And for me, this whole idea of practicing these principles in all my affairs has to do with God, what is my next step? God, how do I go out there and live my life? God, how do I make my life better? Because I don't believe that God just intends me to stop compulsive overeating and that's it. I believe that God has removed the obsession of compulsive overeating so that I can think about things that are more important to me. So I can find what's special to me, what makes my life mine. You know, that's what I get to ask the questions now about what's important to me and how can I apply the principles to it. I also think that the 12th step has to do with how can I best serve. You know, God presents us with opportunities of how to serve. Some people are better sponsors than others. Some people are better just being meeting secretaries than other people. You know, I believe that God has designed a place for us where we can be of maximum service. I mean, He's got 7 sponsors. I have 1, and I have 1 tentative guy maybe to be a sponsor. You know. But, like, for me, I found, like, I do a lot of service, like, on my intergroup board. And I do a lot of service at World Service. I was a delegate, so I got to go there and vote on stuff. Like, that's where my passion is. And it's like, for me, it's still about carrying the message, but it's another aspect of that where some people are like, I couldn't go and vote on stuff all day. Like, I couldn't do that. It's like, it's a different way to carry the message. And also that there's no wrong way to carry the message. It really is just about sharing our experience. you know, I'm sitting here today and I feel like I'm hardly even here. I feel a little like cloudy today. So I feel like, did I even carry the message to you guys? Because the 12th step is, I think it's about experience. I think it's about having experience and just going out there and doing it. Having had a spiritual experience as a result of working these steps, we carry the message to other compulsive overeaters and practice these principles in all our affairs. I think I'm really scared to believe that God really has changed my life as much as He truly has. And I think I really have to stop and be willing to acknowledge the level to which God has truly entered my life and has truly changed who I am today. It's really humbling to have to admit that something bigger than yourself had to change you. And I'm in the middle of a seventh step in program and another seventh step. And my sponsor's having me get on my knees every day and really pray over my defects of character. And really asking God to remove them. And they're very specific. And He's having me write a list of my character assets. And the act of getting on my knees and truly humbly asking God to remove them and reading the seventh step prayer, it, for the first time in my 7 years in program, has truly connected me to the understanding that I'm not the one that does it. I'm not the one that does it. And what is so hard about carrying the message to other people, what is difficult about the 12th step, is that we have to be willing to acknowledge that we're not the ones that did it. I believe for me, my humanness so wants me to find my place on this earth and claim it. And claim my stance that I have a place in this world, you know, like I'm here, man. Like, I did this shit, and I did life, and I did it hard, you know? And the program teaches me that I don't have to do life hard. I don't have to do it alone. And then just by the act of being who I am, with nothing to prove, really is enough. And when I'm working with another compulsive overeater, or when I'm sitting in a meeting, or when I'm out in the world and I want to lash out at something that truly isn't right, but I know that if I were to react, I wouldn't be behaving appropriately. It's really humbling. It's really humbling. And I think the 12th step is about remembering that I was given the gift of a spiritual experience. And I am responsible. I'm responsible for what I do with that gift. And every day I have to cherish it and I have to nurture it. And you know what? People in program really easily look at other people who have recovery or who have lost a lot of weight and like look up to them, and they can't wait to hear them speak, and they can't all that kind of stuff. Or you know, oh, I listened to your podcast 5 times, and it's like, I had that podcast up 5 years ago. Please, like, don't listen to my podcast again. And to sit down with someone who thinks you've got it made, and you share your experience by, hey, I didn't have it made then, and I still don't have it made, but one day at a time, I'm doing the best that I can with this program. And when I really share my experience and I get honest with someone else about, yeah, well, when they need experience with something, and I can sit there and say, yeah, I'm going through that right now. Yeah, my girlfriend and I are fighting, or yeah, I don't like my job, and I'm under earning this, but I am abstinent. I'm abstinent, but I'm not perfect. I'm abstinent, but yeah, my life is falling apart. That is recovery. Recovery is that we're living, and we're living abstinently, and we let other people know that it's possible. So, that's my 20 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Thank you guys. We'll now have a 10-minute break.